It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Crew members from an Iranian ship seized by the U.S. after trying to breach its military blockade last month have been transferred to Pakistan for repatriation, sorry, according to Pakistan's foreign ministry. 22 crew members held aboard the MV Tuska container ship were taken to Pakistan Sunday night and will be handed over to Iranian authorities today, according to the ministry in a statement released this morning. The Iranian ship will also be backloaded to Pakistani territorial waters for return to its original owners after necessary repairs. Pakistan describes the move as, quote, a confidence-building measure by the U.S. and said the repatriation is being coordinated with support of both the U.S. and Iran.
Yeah, again, as we talked earlier this morning, it certainly doesn't feel like things are slowing down in the Middle East. And it certainly doesn't feel like, again, I know we sound like a broken record, but it certainly doesn't feel like anybody in the Middle East has gotten the memo from the president of the United States that the war's over.
No. So. Well, and if the war were over, why would he need to start another mission to skirt the congressional approval for a war that ran out the other day? So, a lot of conflicting messages, as always, coming out of this administration. But the hard fact is we are still at war, a war of choice. We are still paying the cost for that war on a number of fronts. And we will be continuing, even if the war were to end, we will continue to pay the price for this war for months, if not the next year.
Right.
So there's that.
In other headlines, as we bring things closer to home, stuff you need to know, efforts to relieve high water levels after mid-April storms flooded communities in the Green Bay, Appleton, and Oshkosh areas have closed the port of Green Bay for 2 weeks, causing a mounting economic impact on key industries. The Army Corps of Engineers in mid-April opened the dam gates on Lake Winnebago to relieve high water levels after major storms dumped record rainfalls across the massive Fox Wolf watershed. The outflows increased the water velocity on the Fox River to speeds that since April 18th have made it unsafe for ships to navigate the port. The Port of Green Bay director said that the entire watershed got so much rain it created one-of-a-kind conditions on the river and for the port, which generates about $217 million in economic activity every year and supports more than 1,600 local jobs. The unexpected conditions left port terminal operators to scramble for alternative ways to take delivery of raw materials like wood pulp, petroleum products, and cement that are vital to key northeastern Wisconsin industries like paper, construction, and agriculture. At least four ships, possibly as many as 10, have diverted to a different port or turned around. Companies that shift deliveries to a different port have to pay to have the materials delivered to Green Bay via trucks. One ship, the Edinburgh, has been docked in the bay for 12 days now, waiting it out, unable to deliver its wood pulp cargo. The Lake Winnebago dam gates could need to remain open, making the port inaccessible for another 10 to 14 days without an alternative solution. I mean, when you're talking about that kind of economic impact, you really hope that this gets alleviated sooner than later, I think, because
and the elevated cost of having to truck stuff with fuel costs for trucks rising at a rapid rate again, that's got to add more. So it would mean, as it should, that things are going to start costing more again. If the suppliers have to pay more and the companies have to pay more, they got to make that up somewhere, and it's coming to us.
I mean, we really don't think about, I don't know. I think for a lot of people, we've talked a lot about the supply chain over the last few months in terms of this war in Iran. But when you look at it on a more local level, I don't think we think about the environmental impact that that supply chains can, you know, be overwhelmed by. I mean, in this case, it's a flooding or a river running too fast. And obviously, that throws everything off, which is just bad for business.
And in a very simple thing, you would think, well, they're ships. They're on the water.
Yeah.
A little more water. How's that going to affect the ship? Well, it doesn't affect the ship itself. It affects how the ship gets to port. And that's you know, where it's going to dock. So that's
rough. I think it also highlights how interconnected our economy is in this state, because you're like, oh, it's just coming into to Green Bay. It's wood pulp. It's you know, petroleum. No, that stuff that has to get to other places within the state, it just happens to come into Green Bay.
That's the easiest spot for it to get unloaded.
Yeah. But,
yeah. All right, some more as you need to know. U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro, you remember her from TV, said that the bullet that struck a Secret Service agent in the shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner was, quote, definitely from suspect Cole Thomas Allen's gun. We can now establish that a pellet that came from the buckshot from the defendant's Mossberg pump-action shotgun was intertwined in the fiber of the vest of the Secret Service officer. That was according to Pirro on CNN's State of the Union. USA Today also previously reported that evidence collected so far indicates the only Secret Service agent who actually fired their weapon at Allen was the one who was injured as he tried to prevent what prosecutors allege was an attempted assassination on President Trump. The agent, who has not been identified, fired five times but did not hit the suspect. Initial court filings did not specifically allege that Allen shot the agent, though Trump and administration officials have claimed that he did in public comments. Of course, why wouldn't they? That's their go-to. This is interesting and noteworthy because what it shows is the government does not yet have conclusive proof that the suspect did not shoot the agent. That is, according to Mark Lesko, a former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York. He told the BBC that on Friday. Allen, the suspect, currently faces assassination and firearm charges. There may be some more charges filed when he appears before a grand jury on May 8th.
I think this is interesting for multiple reasons, because obviously just last week there was speculation about whether the agent might have actually even been hit by friendly fire. And then this weekend we find out that the evidence points directly, at least according to Jeanine Pirro, to the suspect's gun.
What I don't understand, and what I know about firearms is limited. I will admit that. But I also know buckshot, while it does scatter, there's still concentration of the buckshot. One pellet getting it, that seems unusual to me. And maybe I'm off, but that seems a little unusual. And then an agent firing five times and not hitting someone, these guys are really highly trained.
Well, I think that goes back to what we talk about, though, right? Who were the agents in the lobby? Because we talked about this after the incident. Were those agents actually Secret Service agents, or were they part of some sort of independent security firm? Those are questions that this administration still hasn't answered. And let's be clear, we're not going to get, should be the pause that all of us have on this, is we're not going to get the full story on this at all.
Never.
No.
Are we going to find out about this canine unit that sniffed and looked, went in the door where the suspect came out of, but was pulled away by his handler? And the new footage that's coming out, we do see that they were breaking down that station. The law enforcement had decided that nobody else was coming through here. Right. So they had one magnetometer left up. They were in the process of breaking down one. I don't know how many had been broken down before that.
I mean, and when we look at the type of rhetoric that we already have in this country, anytime we start adding this sort of speculation, it just adds to all of that, right? I think that's what bothers me the most, is this administration could quickly put all of that speculation and that rhetoric to rest, but they just choose not to. They absolutely choose not to, by not giving out the full details, by not giving the full story, by continually surrounding themselves in some sort of vague mystery.
And part of the problem is they jump to conclusions. It is infuriating, but they jump out with, first it was, oh, he's dead. Well, he wasn't dead.
No.
The suspect. Then it's, he shot the guy. Well, we don't know yet. So they're in such a hurry to make headlines and to get in front of a camera that they don't allow the facts to play out. And then, you know what? We can wait a few minutes.
Right.
I know in this accelerated news cycle, we don't think that we can wait a few minutes, but I would rather wait and just have the report come out. There's been a shooting, more details to follow. But okay, let's wait for some facts and some
details.
Is that part
of the ploy? That's where my mind goes. Is that part of the ploy from this administration, who likes to surround themselves in this layer of mystery and likes to convey this mistrust among people? Because if you do that and there is this mistrust, then that trickles down to our institutions, law enforcement, the justice system.
Yeah, but the mistrust is aimed at them.
But they don't see it like that.
Isn't this a backfire?
For a lot of their base of voters, it is a mistrust of the entire system. It because they believe anything this administration tells them, and this administration, I'm not sure, has learned that that doesn't necessarily work with all voters.
it also has to, even for the most ardent MAGA supporters. Wouldn't it seem like this would get confusing if one minute your hero is telling you one thing, and then he comes out 15 minutes later and tells you something else, and the day later he tells you the exact opposite?
You would think, but they continually try. They believe what this president says. It's been a pattern that we've seen. And that's why earlier this morning when we talked about the polling numbers, where 85% of Republicans still support the president and this administration and their agenda— this is why, because they continually believe what they're being told, even if things change or seem contradictory to other people. And I wish I could explain it. It's a full level.
I wish you could explain it too.
I wish I could explain it. I really do, because I find it a really interesting phenomenon, because I don't know if we've ever seen it to this level with any other president of the United States, of either party, who have been able to lie like this and continually change their story.
And I know, we could talk about cognitive dissonance and people not wanting to believe things that go against their core belief for whatever reason, whether it's they are really true believers, or even if they're not true believers, now they're embarrassed.
Right.
They don't want to be proven wrong, that maybe they backed the wrong horse, or maybe they're, mm-hmm. they were lied to. Even if people are lied to, they don't want to turn their back on that liar.
Right.
They don't want to make, because then it reflects badly on you, right?
Right?
If you believe a liar all the time, what does that say about your intelligence,
right,
your character, all of that? So it's the internal struggle to not have to be proven wrong.
Right.
And nobody likes to be proven wrong.
No, nobody likes to be proven wrong. We have just about a minute left, and I think this is a big one, especially if you're somebody who loves the outdoors. In other headlines of stuff you need to know.
Oh, I wondered if you were going to try to get to this.
Yeah, we'll get to it really quickly. Wisconsin health professionals are bracing for a bad year for Lyme disease because tick activity is already higher in April than it was at the same time last year. We have a lot of warmer and wetter weather, which can increase the risk of illnesses from ticks because they thrive in warm, humid mm-hmm. weather. And something I didn't know about ticks until I moved to the great state of Wisconsin, they can actually survive in temperatures above freezing. They become, in fact, more active when it's about between 45 and 50 degrees. They don't actually die during the winter. So ticks, darn it, they are always around. So
I had one on me last week?
Yeah, probably mowing the grass.
Gross, gross.